Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, come closer. Yeah, come on. Yada Sabayam Kuru Deva Devya Kesha Abhimarsham Sutta Karma Garhyam Na Varayamasa Nirpa Snushaya Swasrai Harantyaha Kuncha kum kumani Yada sabayam kuru deva devya Kesha bimarsham sutta karma gharyam Navarayamasa nirpasnushaya Swasrayaharam cha kucha kum kumani Yada
When
Sabayam
The assembly
Kurudeva Devya
Of
Draupadi The wife of godly Yudhishthir Kesha Abhimarsham
Insult by grabbing her hair
Sutta Karma
Action taken by his son
Garhyam
Which was abominable
Na
Did not
Varayamasa
Forbid
Nirpa
The king
Snushaya
Of his daughter-in-law
Sasrai
By her tears
Harantya
Of
she who was washing
Kucha kumkumani
Red dust on her breast
Translation
The king did not forbid his son Dushasana's abominable action of grabbing the hair of Draupadi, the wife of the godly King Yudhisthira, even though her tears washed the red dust on her breast. Yudhisthira, who was born without any enemy, was unfairly defeated in gambling. But because he had taken the vow of truthfulness, he went off to the forest. When he came back in due course, and begged the return of his rightful share of the kingdom. He was refused by Dhritarashtra, who was overwhelmed by illusion. Purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the rightful heir to his father's kingdom. But just to favor his own sons, headed by Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, Maharaj Yudhisthira's uncle, adopted various unfair means to cheat his nephews of their rightful share of the kingdom. At last, the Pandavas demanded only 5 villages, one for each of the 5 brothers. But that was also refused by the usurpers. This incident led to the war of Kurukshetra. The battle of Kurukshetra, therefore, was induced by the Kurus and not the Pandavas. As Kshatriyas, the proper livelihood of the Pandavas was only to rule and not to accept any other occupation. A Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya will not accept employment for his livelihood under any circumstances. Om again, These verses speak about great transgressions, great offenses. But according to the modern standard, these things don't seem to be such a big deal. Because the modern standard is so bestial, so low. People don't have any honor, and they don't expect honorable dealings or dealings of integrity. Everyone is habituated to doing the dirty on everyone else, and they call that a human society. Just look at the things here that are considered great transgressions, great offenses from the Vedic point of view. Dushasana grabbed the hair of Draupadi, the wife of Yudhisthira. And of course, you know what's more. Besides touching the hair of Draupadi, which was considered celestial, had been sanctified by Yajna, so her hair was very special. So besides the offense of Dushasana, Dhritarashtra's son, grabbing her her hair, what was more, the most powerful generals in public tried to disrobe Draupadi because they had unfairly won her in a gambling match, which you hear about in the next verse. Now, for a woman today to have her hair touched or to be disrobed in public, well, that's not considered a big deal. But from the Vedic viewpoint, that's considered horrible. A woman's beauty is her shyness and her modesty. Women should always be a bit mysterious for men, and the men appreciate and respect. But as soon as a woman reveals everything, then men take advantage, and they just consider just something to be, you're just something to be picked up and put down at will. Just like yesterday or the day before we were hearing the ladies' view and the men's view, and you could see there was such a great divide. The ladies were saying that in order to they'll indulge in some certain behavior in order to feel that they're pleasing someone, in order to feel wanted, and also in order to get commitment, to extract commitment. And then you saw the male reaction to that. Commitment? No way. Security? Forget it. So this is the way material nature has arranged this duality. Dvandva Mohena Bharata. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita talks about the dualities of illusion. Male, female is a duality. Hot, cold, pleasure, pain, wealth, poverty. The material world is simply a bag of these dualities. And they cannot be resolved on the material plane. They can only be resolved in Krishna consciousness. Because devotional service is above the duality. Therefore, when man and woman engage in devotional service, then there can be some sense, there can be some sanity. Otherwise, they are perpetually struggling with these dualities. We've been speaking about how the beauty of a woman is, of course, chasteness. There's no question of that. But that chasteness expresses itself as modesty. The ability not to reveal everything. How that can be applied in modern culture, that takes some thought. Because obviously it's not going to be like in traditional Indian culture. Prabhupada would talk about how his mother, just to go visit relatives or neighbors across the street, would go in a palanquin that was covered. So the people on the street couldn't see her, just across the street to visit her neighbor. You know, a palanquin would be ordered, and she would ride in the palanquin with the curtains closed, and just to go across the street to chat with her neighbors. So, modern people can't understand that. In fact, they'll think it's slavery. Anything that doesn't expose women, that's slavery. This is all the male propaganda to fulfill their desires. Why should you be a slave? Reveal everything. Expose yourself. The more exposed you are, the more liberated you are. But from the Vedic viewpoint, there has always been an air of mystery about women. For the men. The men should always feel they're dealing with a bit of a mystery. That keeps them respectful. And also saves the men a lot of problems. Because unless a man is prepared to take on the mission of dealing with, you know, female existence, they should just be a bit back, stand back a bit. So, the Vedic culture has a reason for everything. It's hard, even harder these days, talking about restraint in terms of female behavior because of, you know, the Afghanistan war and the Taliban. As soon as you say women should be modest, it's the Taliban. They want to cover their faces and all sorts of severe restrictions, Muslim restrictions. It's not like that. But the lady should always have a sense of gracefulness and dignity. Not to be just, well, for want of a better term, you know, the Western slang, let it all hang out. The men, according to their lower desires, they want that, but Vedic culture prevents them from having that and encourages the men to have high character. Therefore, it was an offense for even those who were just watching Draupadi being dishonored in this way. It wasn't an offense simply for those who were doing this deed, like Dushasana. It was also an offense for those who were watching. Even Bhishma Dev watched and didn't say anything. Of course, Bhishma Dev is the Lord's pure devotee, and he's on the other side just so that he can eventually fight with Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra and give Krishna pleasure in that way. And also Krishna wanted to show that even the greatest military general, Bhishma, couldn't win on the wrong side. Bhishma's situation is different. Not that his heart was in to what the Kurus were doing. He knew that they were wrong, but he felt a Kshatriya's noble obligation because the Kauravas were maintaining him. Fealty, like in the Middle Ages when a noble would maintain some knights and his obligation. You've read that when you were kids, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. So, that all comes from Vedic culture. It's Kshatriya culture. So, Bhishma felt he had an obligation to his lords, his noble lords, even though he knew they were wrong. So he didn't say anything when Draupadi was being assaulted in this way. Of course, modern people say, well, she's not really being assaulted. Someone grabbed her hair. It's like if you're walking down the street, lady, and some man came and grabbed her hair. I mean, it's not like it would be considered a great crime. The police would probably, if they caught the person, probably just give them a warning that, he didn't harm you, he just grabbed your hair, what's the big deal? But in Vedic culture, women just don't show their hair to everyone. And what to speak of allowing someone to grab their hair, and what to speak of Draupadi's hair, which was sanctified by Yantya, by Vedic sacrifice. So people have a hard time understanding these things. They encourage the women to expose as much as possible, dress in an exposing, alluring way. And that means freedom. But what actually results is that the women become degraded without any self-respect, without any dignity, and the men become just totally weak, feeble-minded. So, although it's the men's trick, they are the ones who are losing. So the men don't have any determination, any backbone, because they've indulged so much in illicit affairs that they don't have what makes them a man. They lose their maleness in the process of all this. That's the amazing thing. They think they're expressing themselves as men, but they're actually losing their manhood. This is hard. It should be hard to understand these things. They think that by encouraging the women to expose everything, and by encouraging the women to be loose, so that there's a lot of action available in the marketplace, the men think that that's victory for them. Then they can freely just be men by ravishing everyone. But actually, in that process, the men lose their maleness. They don't have determination anymore, they don't have strength, they don't have intelligence. So then it's natural that the ladies say, well, what's the use of you guys? It's natural. And then because the ladies know they're going to be exploited, they figure they have to become more aggressive to get what they want and to defend themselves. So in this way, everything just becomes a problem. The men become very weak, the ladies become more aggressive, because they don't know how to fend, they don't know how to protect themselves. The ladies don't know how to do this, so they just think, oh, we just gotta respond by being more aggressive. They never think that they should respond by becoming more reserved and less exposed. You know, everything like that. Now, the way to deal with the men is you become more aggressive. So these verses are explaining to you how different real human culture is from what we have today. And just hear the poetic description of Draupadi. The tears were washing the red dust on her breast, the kumkum powder, the faded decoration. Her tears, she was crying. Oh, how can you dishonor me like this? Then in the next verse, you hear about Yudhisthira. He was also offended. Kshatriyas are allowed to gamble. So, and they can't refuse any challenge, whether it's fighting in a battle or gambling. Kshatriyas live a life, Vedic warriors live a life in which it's passionate. Kshatriyas have passion in them. They're supposed to be ready to give up their life at the drop of a hat. Not that, oh, I have such a big kingdom, such a big palace, so many wives, I cannot accept your challenge to fight. Regardless of all their wealth and possessions and power, they have to be ready to give up their life at the drop of a hat. They cannot refuse a challenge to battle. And also, gambling. Yudhisthira was unfairly defeated in gambling. They invited he and the Pandavas to a gambling match, and the dice were rigged. They were made from the bones of someone, and they were all rigged. Some kind of psychic way. So the Pandavas were losing everything. And the Kurus kept saying, okay, what are you going to bet now? And the Kurus knew everything was rigged. Why don't you bet your wife? And so that's how the Pandavas lost Draupadi, unfairly in a gambling match. And that's why the Kurus attempted to disrobe Draupadi, and they grabbed her hair, because, she's ours now! You lost her! And then, the Pandavas, they had to go in exile. That was part of the gambling deal. You lose again, and you have to go into the forest for 13 years or something like that. And if you're discovered while you're in the forest during that time, you got to stay in exile, hidden away another 13 years or so, more or less. So, Yudhisthira is described here as, he's described as a Jatashatru. He's someone who had no enemy. Yet, still, he was caught up in these unpalatable situations. That shows you the way this world is. Even though Yudhisthira is such a saintly person, he had no enemy. Still, he was caught in these duplicitous, challenging situations. That should teach you about the nature of this world. Don't think that just because you're trying to be sincere that there won't be problems. This material world is a problem place. But Krishna promises you in Bhagavad Gita. What does Krishna promise you? Do you have a Bhagavad Gita here? You see, Yudhisthira had taken the vow of truthfulness. So even though he had been cheated, he had unfairly lost the gambling match, still he accepted the result. Because he was noble in all circumstances. these things have to be applied practically. It doesn't mean that when you're doing Krishna's service, or even for your own personal affairs, if you are cheated, you should just, you know, accept it. No. We have to do what is practical for Krishna's pleasure. For ourselves, maybe we're not so concerned, but for Krishna's service, we're concerned. And if your life is engaged in Krishna's service, then also you have to be concerned for yourself, because yourself belongs to Krishna. We're not artificially renounced. Just like Prabhupada once explained that, a devotee asked him, well, what do you do if somebody comes to attack you? Let's just say someone comes in the front door here and attacks you. You just, oh well, I'm useless and they're attacking me, they're not attacking Krishna. I deserve everything I should get, and I deserve worse. Let's try to understand the social problems of the attacker. How his parents mistreated him. No, that's not the way you should think. Oh, I won't fight back. Let Krishna protect me. No, you should think that my life is engaged in Krishna's service. It's Krishna's property, therefore I have to protect it. Why should I let this fool interrupt my service? So you do the best you can. Just like Draupadi did the best she could when she was being disrobed. You know, these huge generals capable of fighting hundreds of soldiers single-handedly. They were grabbing onto her sari and trying to, you know, disrobe her. And you know what happened? They just pulled and pulled and pulled, and this heaps of sari were just building up. And they pulled and pulled, and you know, they just couldn't get to the end of it. It's the a favorite incarnation of Krishna for the ladies. The sari incarnation. Krishna incarnated as her sari. So Krishna's unlimited, so her sari became unlimited. At first she was trying to fight off the men. Not by fighting them personally, she knew that was impossible, but by, you know, holding on to her clothes. But how could she, you know, her strength is no match for these great generals. So finally she just realized, there's nothing I can do. I've done my best to protect myself, protect my honor. There's nothing I can do. So she just raised both hands in the air and called out to Govinda, please protect me. So in that moment of helplessness, the Lord incarnated as your sari. So the generals were pulling and pulling and pulling, and so much cloth was piling up that they could never get to the end. Now, you can see here that even the most noble persons with such exemplary integrity, the Pandavas and Draupadi, they had to go through such ordeals and challenges. Even Bhishmadev, the greatest warrior, the general, at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, when Bhishmadev was thinking of all that the Pandavas and Draupadi had to go through, tears came to his eyes, and he, like the most powerful warrior who could kill so many soldiers at one time single-handedly. But still, when he thought about what the Pandavas and Draupadi had to go through, tears came to his eyes. So he said, how could this be? That the Pandavas apparently suffered so much. Yudhisthira, he's Dharmaraj. He's the king of religion, the king of Dharma. And Arjuna is the great fighter. He's the companion, personal friend of the Lord. Draupadi is practically the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Still, in spite of all these extraordinary assets, the Pandavas had to go through challenges and ordeals. So Bhishmadev, thinking about that, had tears in his eyes. And he said, we can only understand these things by saying it's the will of the Lord. Sometimes people wonder, you know, you discussed before, maybe. Why do bad things happen to good people? It was a popular book in the USA, probably in New Zealand, especially after the World Trade Center disaster in the USA, September 11th. People were saying, how could this happen to us? Why did God let this happen? Why did God do this to us? Who could be more righteous and noble than the Pandavas and Draupadi? Yet they have to go through such an ordeal. That should help you to understand something about this world. This world is not a cabaret. You have those here. Cabarets are... That's a better word. What do people go to, you know, for a good time? There's music and dancing and mirth and merriment. All right. Okay, the world's not a dance party. they never had cabarets? What is it anyway? What is it? Tables?
Yeah, they had tables, but they had women doing shows and like dancing.
Anyway, this world is not a cabaret or a dance party. It is a place of problems. If even the Pandavas and Draupadi had to encounter problems, what to speak of anyone else? So it's not so much that there are problems. That will be a fact. But it's how you handle them that shows what you're made of. So don't think that because you've taken the Krishna consciousness that all the problems of the world will disappear. No, they won't disappear, but you'll be able to handle them. That's the point. So it's not unusual to undergo problems, but the unusual thing is to handle them properly. So that is how Krishna consciousness will make the difference in your life, the ability to handle problems. Otherwise, this world is a big problem place. Without a doubt. Now what does Krishna say about the inevitable challenges and problems of this world? Krishna says, Machita sarva durgani maprasada tradishyasi achitram ahankaram nashroshyasi vinankshyasi. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you'll be lost. So that is Krishna's guarantee. Yes, there are obstacles, but you'll overcome them if you are conscious of Krishna, if you're Krishna conscious. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport, a person in full Krishna consciousness is not unduly anxious about executing the duties of his existence. The foolish cannot understand this great freedom from all anxiety. It's like people can see that in you all. They can see that you're living, you're eating, you're sleeping, but you're just not unduly anxious about executing the duties of material existence. By the way, where is Craig? All right. The foolish can't understand this great freedom from all anxiety. It's not an irresponsible freedom. That's why we're always careful to make sure everyone here is pushing ahead in their life in a progressive way. Not that you just use this place to loiter, to hang out, and avoid making key decisions that are necessary for your life. But everyone has to be responsible about pushing on with their life. So our freedom from anxiety is not irresponsibility. I'll just hang out and see what happens. No, everyone has to be engaged according to their nature. So we see here, some people, they come and they're single and they work. And maybe after some time they choose to become brahmacharis or brahmacharinis. Or some people who are single may choose to marry. They always have to view these decisions as part of their march back to Godhead. The various stations of life are for becoming purified. So, for one who acts in Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna becomes the most intimate friend. He always looks after his friend's comfort. And he gives himself to his friend, who is so devotedly engaged, working 24 hours a day to please the Lord. So you'll have to become devotionally sensitive in Krishna consciousness to see the Lord's friendly reciprocation with you, because you're engaged 24 hours a day in his service. Therefore, no one should be carried away by the false ego of the bodily concept of life. One should not falsely think himself independent of the laws of material nature or free to act. He is already under strict material laws. But as soon as he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is liberated, free from the material perplexities. One should note very carefully that one who is not active in Krishna consciousness is losing himself in the material whirlpool, in the ocean of birth and death. No conditioned soul actually knows what is to be done and what is not to be done. But a person who acts in Krishna consciousness is free to act, because everything is prompted by Krishna from within and confirmed by the spiritual master. Once again, Krishna is saying, if you become conscious of him, you'll pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by his grace. So that shows you how Krishna consciousness shapes your lifestyle. It's not that the problems of the world disappear, but in a sense, for you, they disappear because you pass over them. You have an experience, maybe of driving on the road, and you pass over a bridge that crosses a ravine or some small river. There's endless ones of those in New Zealand. But you're not always conscious of it, are you? For example, if you're driving to Otaki, how many of you are really conscious that you're crossing over a bridge before you get to the town of Otaki? Do you really kind of pay attention, look down as you're driving over? Does anyone do that? But you are crossing over something. It's there. Similarly, Krishna is telling you that although there are things to pass over in life, there are obstacles, you'll go over them by his grace. So in one sense, they disappear because you pass over them. But in another sense, this world is just a problem place. But you'll be taken over them. You'll be taken through them. Now you may say, well, sometimes it's really tough going through challenges and crises. That's because we identify with the body. To the extent that you identify with your body and mind, to that extent you'll suffer when going through these various challenges in life. That's why we have to increase our Krishna consciousness. Now, another point in this purport is that the battle of Kurukshetra was induced by the Kurus, not the Pandavas. Many people think that Krishna started the war. That is true. Ultimately, everything is started by Krishna. But Krishna is completely fair. He gave the Kurus every warning, as you'll see in the next verse. He even went to speak peace to them, but they wouldn't listen. So the Kurus actually start by their aggressive, offensive behavior. And the Pandavas were duty-bound to respond. According to Vedic injunction, the Pandavas had to respond. They couldn't allow such irreligiosity. Still, Arjuna was so soft-hearted that he was saying to Krishna, we should not fight. when actually Dharma obligated the Pandavas to fight. They were fighting in response to aggression by the Kurus. The Kurus wouldn't even give them a tiny bit of land to rule. When Yudhisthira came out of exile, after so many years in the forest, he went and said, "Can you just give us a few villages? Give us one village for each brother." It's like if you were formerly the Prime Minister of New Zealand, and then you got pushed out of power, and then you went to the new party leaders or the new party in power and said, "Can I just be, you know, like Mayor of Carterton?" Nothing. We won't let you do anything. We won't even let you run a post shop in Carterton. So that's what Dhritarashtra and his sons were saying. Because a Vedic Kshatriya has to have something to rule. Not just for his own sense of gratification, but to give protection to the people. Ruling means giving protection. Doesn't mean lording it over. So it was the Pandavas' duty as Kshatriyas, Vedic warriors, to give protection. It means they had to have something. They had to have sovereignty over something. But they went and asked, and they just wanted five little villages. But they were refused. How were they refused? They were told, "What to speak of five villages? We won't even give you enough land to fit on the head of a pin." This is totally excessive. So they had no choice but to respond to such aggression by fighting. They unfairly lost the kingdom, and then they went and begged, "Well, give us a little something out of that kingdom that you've cheated us out of." It's like if you go to a shop and you buy something, you know, and then it's defective, you've been cheated, and you go and say, "Well, just can you give me a little something, you know?" It's like, you know, you go and buy a stereo, and the stereo turns out to be totally, you know, faulty, and you go back to the shop and, you know, the shop owner says, "No refunds, no exchanges." Say, "Well, yeah, okay. You ripped me. You sold me this defective stereo. Hi-fi, whatever you call it. But can you give me at least a couple of batteries?" You know, a couple of AA batteries, you know, for my Walkman. And the guy says, I won't even give you a piece of electric wire." And, you know, it would be quite humiliating and devastating. So it was like that, how the Pandavas were treated. And so therefore they had to fight. They were not the aggressors. Although Arjuna is presenting himself in Bhagavad Gita, like, you know, "What is this, Krishna? We can't fight this war. How can we do such a thing?" Finally we read that the Kshatriyas can't accept any other occupation. "A Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya will not accept employment for his livelihood under any circumstances." The Vedic intellectuals and managers and merchants or farmers would not accept employment. Why is that? Who knows? You know, Chloe? Right. From the Vedic perspective, as soon as you are employed, then you're controlled. You all know what it's like to be in the working world. You have to do whatever the boss says. So from the Vedic perspective, that's considered low class. Just to make a buck, you'll do so many things. The example is given, Prabhupada would give, that it's like when you're a dog with a master, you have to offend so many innocent people. Innocent people will walk by your house and still the dog will bark. "I'm a dog here. This is my place." My master wants me to bark at all strangers. So this way the dog offends so many innocent people. If you're doing door-to-door on Sankirtan, you've had that experience. The dogs are still bothering you. I saw some gadget in the States which totally repels dogs, makes a high-pitched sound. Do they sell those in New Zealand? Should we get one for you? Is it a real problem? They like you, the dog? I guess it's one of these gadgets that makes a high-pitched sound. So the dogs don't like it. So anyway, the Vedic perspective is that when you take up employment, you just lose your independence. You, for the sake of getting the money, you have to act in a certain way. So therefore, the higher sections of society don't take up employment. They're forbidden. Not only the intellectuals, the Brahmanas, but even the merchants, they always have to go in business for themselves. That way they have their autonomy. So the Pandavas, what could they do? They're not going to take jobs. They're warriors, rulers, managers, administrators. So, you know, they have to have their own scene to administrate. For all these reasons, even though Yudhishthira was born without any enemy, still he had to fight. Any questions?
When Bhishma died, he was attracted to Krishna past Parthasarathy. So, when he went back to the spiritual world, what sort of, what would he be doing?
In Vaikuntha. His secondary rasa was chivalry. His primary rasa was friendship or serviceship, serviceship. So that's his main rasa. He's attracted to the opulences of the Lord. He's not a Vrindavan devotee. So there'll be a Vaikuntha planet where he can always see Krishna in that way. Yes. Sadhana Siddha means you attain perfection in Krishna consciousness by following the process of sadhana bhakti. Kripa Siddha means you didn't deserve, but still you got. The example is given. I'm sure you've read Nectar Devotion yet. Someone who's, you know, hasn't gone to university, but they get some kind of honorary degree. So that is Kripa Siddha. The mercy of the Lord and spiritual master. But as you read in Nectar and Devotion, although you can hope for Kripa Siddha, but you should try through sadhana bhakti. But you always have that hope that you'll get the special mercy that will take you across the ocean of material existence. You shouldn't wait around, as Prabhupada writes, you shouldn't wait around for honorary degrees. Let's say if you went to the uni and thought, well, some people get honorary degrees, so why should I study? I'll just wait and see if I get an honorary degree. It does happen, but you'd be quite foolish just to wait around and do nothing, thinking you'll get it. You have the responsibility to endeavor. So we should endeavor through sadhana bhakti while always expecting the mercy of the Lord. sometimes you see people come to Krishna consciousness who had no idea that they were meant to come to Krishna consciousness. That can be Guru Kripa, the mercy of spiritual master. They had no intention, but all of a sudden something happened and they decided, I want to be Krishna conscious. They had no prior background, no prior desire. So that goes on, because this is Lord Chaitanya's movement. Lord Chaitanya is freely giving Krishna to everyone, even to persons who don't know Krishna. That's one of the... movement. Lord Chaitanya is freely giving Krishna to everyone, even to persons who don't know Krishna. That's one of the joys of preaching. You'll see people who had no intention of serving Krishna, they drown in the ocean of love of God. That's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That is a kind of, that is definitely Kripa, mercy. Just like our Allison, she was coming to yoga for many years, and all of a sudden, it's just became dedicated to executing Krishna consciousness. But it is a fact that in Lord Chaitanya's movement, there's always an element of Guru Kripa, special mercy. Because the age of Kali is so difficult. That's why Srila Prabhupada would always give us so many opportunities to get Krishna's special mercy through preaching. So if you're smart, you simply take the order of your spiritual masters, your life and soul, and that does bring you the special mercy beyond just routinely executing your sadhana. But make no mistake, the spiritual master is very pleased if you do your sadhana every day. But beyond that, if you take the mission of the spiritual master in your heart, to distribute Krishna consciousness, to enthuse everyone with love of Prabhupada's books, then you're entitled to special mercy. Because that taking into the heart of the mission of the spiritual master is, that's even more than executing sadhana. So my mission is to, if you're interested, is to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mission. So if someone assists me in doing that, then certainly they're eligible for special mercy. It won't always be easy, but the difficulties are there to purify us and to give us a chance to show to Krishna our determination. Anyone can do anything that's easy. It's nice. But you really see the dedication and devotion when times are a little difficult. They don't take advice from successful householders, spiritually successful householders. Not so much in your circumstance, you have a very simple household life. But once they started getting into the expansionary phase, they don't take advice. The expansionary phase is when the complications go. Atobi hashetra sutapta vitai. A home and land, children, wealth, relatives, friends, you know. That's when all the complications come. Like I was, one householder was telling me, oh, the third kid, that's what did it. I was the straw that broke the camel's back. He did all right. Number one, number two, but number three, my wife totally lost her sadhana. My spiritual life has been so low. Kid number three. I said, look, didn't you ever talk to any other householders about what it's like to have three kids? So he looked at me like, householders talk to other householders? Are you kidding? you just do what you gotta do and then, lament later. So my hope in New Zealand, I'd like to see, it's my dream anyway, that we have first class training for single men and single women. Right now we have it for single women, but we really don't have it for single men. It's a great source of pain for me. And also, we'd like to have serious householders who can give advice to up-and-coming householders. For householders in, for now anyway, I've seen that for householders in the expansionary phase, the householders in Keti show a very good example. Honestly, facing the realities of the expansionary phase, all that entails. Griha, Shaitra, Sutta, land, home, children. It's a real ordeal. So they show a good example of how to responsibly deal with that. So that's what I like to see. Development of ashrams for single men and single women, as well as nice places of advice where new householders entering the expansionary phase can get advice from spiritually dedicated senior householders. Otherwise, you'll just, householders will just hear from who's ever around and, no one follows the principles, not possible, Papa didn't really want us to follow, which is, all sorts of things like that. You're just, depending on who you associate with, you'll hear so many things. Yeah, well, there shouldn't be divorce, but, if you can get along, Krishna understands, and, and on it goes. Household life is difficult. The male-female combination is a difficult one. The male-female bodies have their tendencies. How to live with the opposite sex in purity, that's a great mission. Personally, I'm not directly experienced in that mission. So there should be householders who can guide up-and-coming householders about the expansionary phase, the usual pitfalls and miscalculations and misjudgments. And there's always going to be some marriage problems within the best relationships, periods of misunderstanding, when you're not resonating with each other. Even in the best affairs, it's like that. And then you talk to others, and you find out, it's not so serious, these things happen, you find out some things to do. So we should have spiritually serious householders who are able to give advice. So those things are my hope. But right now we have ideal circumstances for ladies, serious ladies, but the men had it before in the volcanic ashram phase. So many serious men devotees came and they're doing such nice service now. Those things are essential. As Prabhupada writes in the first canto, when discussing Bhishma Dev, that the Brahmachari Ashram is the training place for both the unattached and the attached. as it is now, are men living in the alternative Vedic ashram? You know, they get better training than those who are so-called brahmacharis. So, the name of the game is to get training. However, better to work and like that than be a brahmacharya just wearing saffron cloth, but having no facility to be trained in. The first requirement is training. Not that you put on a particular color of cloth. Waving a particular color of cloth in front of Maya will stop the attacks. Everyone needs a solid program of training and development. They need guidance. Well, no one can think that they're safe just by wearing some cloth. The ladies can't think, oh, now I'm a Brahmin trainee. All right, so I'll just sit around and be a Brahmin trainee. You won't be sitting around for long. You'll go on the prowl. And similarly, the men will also be like that. Okay, I'm a brahmachari now, wearing saffron. They've got me in some room they call the brahmachari ashram. I've got my saffron, but I'm a brahmachari. It takes a bit more than that. You need a solid program of training and development. Otherwise, you'll also go on the prowl. Where is money? Where is woman? Everyone's life should have a sequence of progressive development. You're entitled to those things in Lord Chaitanya's movement. A Krishna conscious man shouldn't want that. And the wife helps the husband to follow the regular principles. It's something they both have to work on together. You're referring to materialistic male desire, just like females have their materialistic desires, but in Krishna consciousness, those things should be dealt with. You understand? The Grihastha ashram, like any other ashram, sannyas or brahmacharya, the Grihastha ashram is meant for purification, not for rotting. So they get married because they need purification in a certain department. We don't say no sex in Krishna consciousness. Krishna himself, what does he say in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? The 7th or is it the 10th? 7th. What does he say? Yes. So we don't say no, we just say according to Dharma. So if you want to experience those things, and most people do at some point in their life, you experience it according to Dharma. Or, if you've sufficiently experienced those things before, or you're smart enough to have avoided the thing altogether in your life and can learn by hearing, if you're in that minority, then life is very easy for you. So, marriage is a situation of purification in Krishna consciousness. Generally, man wants woman, woman wants man. So, how to let this thing go on in a way that can be for Krishna's pleasure? That's why we have marriages. You understand? like you've been a good girl all your life, but you're not going to go through your whole life without any male experience. Right? So how to do that in Krishna consciousness? That's the whole point. What shall we do? Kick you out the doors? Oh, you don't want to be a nun, so get out. No. The householders play a very important role. They try to bring in the world Krishna conscious children. They, if they're prosperous, they try to support the preaching. So what you were saying at first, that refers to male materialistic desires, just like females have their materialistic desires. But Krishna conscious marriages are a chance to become purified of those things. And it takes work. Not that you get it down perfectly immediately. It takes a lot of work. Dialogue, discussing and interacting and trying to make things work for Krishna's pleasure. It's like learning how to drive a car. Okay. The other question. You know that you are Krishna's servant. You know how to function in your relationship with Krishna. Doesn't mean you know the football score in England last night. No. It means you know everything you need to know to give Krishna pleasure. That is your constitutional position. Yes, there's a process for knowing that. Come and talk to me. That's the process. That's all right with you? Okay. I've noticed that people today need some time to stabilize. Come in for a landing. Because they're coming from such jumbled and tumbled backgrounds. Many wounds and hurts. Minds are a bit wild these days. So many bad habits. Heavy metal music and all sorts of things. But they need to spend some time stabilizing. Then gradually we can see who's meant for more. Just like our Stu, he took a few years to, you know, be secure, find his footing, be confident. Most persons would like that. If they come from a relatively unscarred background, unscarred by gross sinful activities, then yes, they can kind of immediately get into things. But most persons aren't like that. You know, they're coming from illicit sex, intoxication, abusive parents, abusive relationships. So it takes a while to get free from these things so they can kind of function properly. So in one sense, this is like a refugee camp. Yeah. fellow Sudevi, remember, in answer to your question, why do people marry? To get purified. It's an arrangement that you can take for getting purified and render service at the same time. Man wants to be with woman, woman wants to be with man. So how can that go on at the same time Krishna can get some pleasure out of it? But if it's taken as an opportunity to putrefy instead of get purified, then what can be done? You don't blame it all on the men. It's not just that the men have their materialistic desires, the ladies also. The ladies want things, security, fixed situation in life. The men are generally more one-pointed in their wants. The women, they want a whole scene. So they make it so that the man has to, in order to get what he wants, he's got to give them what they want. So this way it becomes a bit complicated. But they both want Krishna's service. Then things are easy. You understand? So we're not unrealistic in Krishna consciousness. We understand the tendencies of the bodies and minds. So how can we deal with that in a way that Krishna gets some pleasure out of it? That you make advancement while going through these various phases in life. I mean, you're not going to be a young girl forever. Soon you'll be an old lady. So what kind of life do you want to look back at and see when you're an old lady? Huh? Hunched over.
My name is Sudevi. I remember 35 years ago at the Gaur Yoga Center. I was teaching yoga. Krishna Boka used to take care of me. Sometimes I wasn't very submissive. Then I decided to marry. I left the ashram. Now, my sons are all grown up. Now I should go back to the ashram. I'll find out where's Krishna Loka.
I don't find Krishna Loka with a cane and.
Sudevi, where have you been?
You tell her.
Yes, Krishna Loka, I've come to serve you in the widow's ashram.
Well, that time will come. Kadiravan and Mom in the 60s.
Yes, it was a wonderful life with Mahavan preaching here and there, but at some point I realized I had to let him go. We're in our 60s now. We've learned a lot of things. One part of me wants just me to see him as a sannyasi now that he's 65. The other part of me still can't let go.
So you'll all be thinking like this in the future. Ha ha ha. don't just think the way you are now is the way it's always going to be. Life is moving on. Yes. Mm-hmm. If you actually go through the Grihastha Ashram in Krishna consciousness, yes, you'll be purified. You ever run up with Yashoda, run across Yashoda Dulal and his wife? They're nice to talk to. They actually seriously took to the Grihastha Ashram. And I can't say that no one else has, but I know them. They definitely, you know, they'll freely admit they follow the regular principles throughout their whole Grihastha married life, and they got the result. You know, they have very deep realizations about these things. That's the result. That means purification. Yashoda Dulal will say, quite frankly, said the main reason why he was able to follow regular principles was because of his wife. He gives her that credit. So, yes, if you follow, that's why Krishna says he assesses life according to regular principles. Through Dharma, you become purified of that desire. But if you don't act according to Dharma, it gets worse. But if you act according to Dharma, yes, you do get purified. If someone can actually do without, it is easier. But we're seeing most persons require some. They require to pass through the Grihastha Ashram. And Prabhupada does write in the Bhagavatam that whether it's licit or illicit sex, the outcome is a bit troublesome. Because, you know, raising children is quite a process. So one shouldn't think that just because I'm following regular principles that raising children will be a breeze. Like you talk to Yashoda Dulal. Oh, no more kids. I've had it. I've learned. No. So there should be experienced householders who can give that kind of realization of the value of following the regular principles, the value of sticking to their husband or wife through thick and thin. And younger ones can hear from such persons. You know, water seeks its own level. If you want to hear other things, you certainly find those will say that. You just do what you gotta do, you know, and just work it out, you know, and just, you know, whatever, you know. Krishna understands. You just gotta go through it anyway, so you just might as well, you know, go through it, you know. It's expected that grihasthas are loose. And we can take so many Prabhupada said statements out of context. Like once the Hari Vilas was telling me, like our brother, he was walking. They were on a morning walk with Prabhupada. And all of a sudden, you know, out of the clear, Prabhupada turned around and said, "Tell me, why are the grihasthas always in Maya?" You know, no one knew what to say, especially you know, Hari Vilas was a householder too, things like that. Yeah. Everyone just kind of froze for a while. And Prabhupada just nonchalantly, matter of fact, but he said, because that is their constitutional position. So then you can take that as an excuse. Prabhupada said, we're supposed to be in Maya. No, you can work to overcome these things. But it does take work and effort. If you don't work at it, then indeed it is your constitutional position to be in Maya. But if you work at it, you can go to something else. So we have nice examples of householders who are contributing very much in toward the preaching. The Yatras are a nice example of that. I've heard, I don't know, but someone told me that from the astrological point of view, they shouldn't be anywhere within 50 kilometers of each other. Is that so? Is that someone knows? Is that so? Huh? Yeah, but you see, by through Krishna's service, you never know that, would you? So that just shows you. You know, sometimes our devotees, they really get into the astrology, you know, and that's going to determine everything. First of all, astrologers don't always agree. So astrology is just an indication for marriage. It's not that every astrologer agrees with the other astrologer. But, as Prabhupada always said, the most important thing is Krishna consciousness. Like we had an example in Perth of one couple. And they were, so you ladies know all about the percentages, you know. They were 93% compatible. No one had ever heard of such high compatibility. 93% guaranteed bliss. The marriage lasted a year. You know one of the persons involved. Comes to New Zealand sometimes. So, you know, the main thing is Krishna consciousness. Always look at the yatras. They're not supposed to be within 50 kilometers of each other from the astrological point of view. They're incompatible. But through Krishna's service, dedication to Krishna's service, that resolves so many things. In fact, when I met them, they were breaking up. One told me, well, we'll just be friends. He's all right, but he's a good friend. You going to do your baking?
That's a good
one. All right. Mm-hmm. Which doctor is this? So, the main thing is Krishna consciousness. Okay. Hare Krishna. Krishna Mahari. Mama Namani. Yes, it is. Do you have the music for that, or you know it?